I really want that t-shirt.
Jews with space lasers? Yeah. Oh, man. Some of the memes that cropped up around that were the best.
It's great.
Yes. Lasers in space, built by the Jews.
That's, oh, Mel Brooks, get on. I think he's passed. Rest his soul. It would have been amazing.
No, because he's trying.
Is Mel Brooks still alive?
Oh, yeah. He's trying to do Passion of the Christ 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yes.
That's, I would 1,000%.
He's doing
that.
A sequel to Passion of the Christ, and I have no idea what he's going to do with it.
Something amazing.
I had heard like he was going to do the sequel to Spaceballs as well. The quest for more money.
Gosh, I hope so.
We are so far off the rails.
A little bit.
Mel Brooks is 94 and currently crushing it.
Holy smokes, 94.
Get on it, Mel Brooks. So 94. When the end of the world happens, four things will be alive. Cockroaches, Mel Brooks, Betty White, and
the Queen
Twinkies.
Of England?
Five. It did the Queen.
Yeah.
And the Queen.
And I'm not sure that those three people aren't the same person.
I know, right?
Have you ever
seen
them
in
the
same
room?
Place?
That is the true conspiracy.
Just like the Olsen twin.
Welcome to the podcast where your hosts sample a different scotch each season while we dive into current social, political, and economic issues each episode. This is Scotch and Socialism.
Welcome, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is Scotch and Socialism. I am Jake, your resident big science shill for the evening.
And I am Russ, your resident small science shill.
And I'm Griff, your resident polemicist for the evening.
And I'm Christy, the resident healthcare professional for the evening.
Tonight, we are talking about vaccines and the words we use kind of around them. There was a really great article that the New York Times published recently, kind of taking some small communities in Appalachia as a case study as to like why certain groups are vaccine hesitant is the kind of verbiage that they used. And there's a lot of stuff that, you know, we say around vaccines. So we figured, since we have at least one rhetorician here anyways, sadly, he did not bring the cowbell. Yes, we have a cowbell for you listeners who have been following us.
It's in development.
He was painting it.
It's a beige
for an
cowbell.
Audio, for an audio-only podcast.
It has to fit the aesthetic. It's not right.
He is right. I mean, everything else we do is kind of half-assed.
There's a whole ass going into this cowbell.
Well, anyways, hopefully next recording we will have our rhetorician's cowbell. So I guess to get us kind of started out, what are y'all's experience with vaccine responses?
You're opening a can of worms here, and I'm going to say this right off the bat so that everybody knows why I'm going to be talking a whole lot during this episode, is because during my master's program, part of my portfolio thesis was on anti-vaccination rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent the better part of 4 or 5 months intensively studying why people go to the anti-vaccination side. And the interesting thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more, one of the interesting things is that it doesn't seem to be bound by socio-political leanings or socio-economic leanings. So much like marijuana has bipartisan support, unfortunately, anti-vaccination sentiment has bipartisan support too.
Right.
Left, right, poor, wealthy, white, minority, you name it. There's a section of any of those categories that has a decent chunk of vaccine skeptic population, which is, you know, we can get into this obviously, but it's fascinating in a lot of ways.
Well, it's one of the few things that I think exists across, you know, as you said, you know,
right,
social boundaries. It's interesting enough, obviously, there's been the conversations previously of anti-vaxxers generally around their children, right?
Sure.
Not necessarily like with the whole COVID thing, it's been, well, now that's in everyone's life. And mm-hmm. suddenly I'm talking to 60-year-old people. It's like, hey, are you getting vaccinated? And the answer is, no, we're good. It's like, okay. You know, and I'm
high risk category, but.
Well, and that's the thing, though. But we're now having conversations about it where we kind of sit down at, you know, we finally get back together and two of us sit down and have a meal together for the first time in a year. Thank you, pandemic. Or we're talking with people on the phone that we haven't talked to in a while, or we're chatting with them online or whatever, or we have our Zoom call with our friends and relatives because that's just weird. I actually enjoy it a lot more because I can just hang up. Like, it's so much better.
That's true.
Like,
my connection's bad, Clark.
Yeah, yeah. Christmas.
I'm driving my house through a tunnel.
Christmas was amazing this last year. And that was because I got to spend 2 hours with my parents, 2 hours with my extended family, and that was it. Mm-hmm. I went back to my normal day. Anyways.
Well, because your folks also live pretty far
out. It's a five-hour drive. I love them to death. I don't want to be in a car for 5 hours.
Yeah, I get that. That's the one thing that I always forget about, like, family get-togethers. Is sure. Like, almost all of my family is from around here.
And see, that would be perfect. Like, if they were here, why not? You know, that wouldn't be a big deal. But no, if I have to plan my morning to start at 6 a.m. just to make it out of bed by 7 so I can be there by, like, noon, I'm good.
I don't want to hear it. My family lives in Alabama.
You never see them. There's no requirement.
We see them at least once a year.
Well, yeah, but I'm guessing they don't randomly call you on, like, Friday and be like, hey, what are you doing this weekend? You want to come down?
That's true, they don't.
And then it's this guilt trip of, anyways, getting back on topic.
There's a movie about that.
There
right?
is. Yeah. It's fantastic. But that's the conversation. Like, the first time my parents and I chatted, like, back in February or so, the first question was, well, now the vaccine's available, are you getting it? Well, are you? I don't know. I haven't really looked into it. And that's the other side of it, too. It's like, do we need to look into it? Obviously, we should probably have some level of knowledge before we partake in, well, anything, really.
Right. But that's one of the things that's interesting to me is that you hear or you interact with, I guess, a lot of different reasons and rationales for skepticism and varying levels of skepticism, too.
Oh, absolutely.
From the individuals who will be just like hard no, just like, nope, never going to vaccinate my kids, not going to do the COVID vaccine, anything like that, to you get to the people who are, well, you know, we're going to, you know, space out my kids' vaccines. This is something our former president actually kind of pushed. And you get the people who are probably more accepting of vaccines in general, but are skeptical of how quickly this one, being the corona vaccines, kind of came out and were approved and put into effect. And they're like, well, we're going to see how, you know, the first wave goes.
Sure.
Y'all can be guinea pigs.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's...
And let's be clear, like, it's been tested. Rather than doing a lot of the sequential testing that they would usually do, they ended up doing a lot of it at the same time, a lot of in parallel. And that actually helped expedite a lot of it. Plus, the lack of bureaucracy was a huge benefit.
That's true.
You know, the fact that the government kind of stepped back and said, okay, well, let's check all the boxes, you know, let's make sure everything's done. But
now, if I'm not mistaken, and y'all are much more kind of science-oriented than me, this is not necessarily a ground up brand new vaccine.
No, mRNA, speaking specifically to the two major ones that are in the States, not including Johnson & Johnson, I can't remember if Johnson & Johnson's mRNA.
It's not. It's standard.
I didn't think so. Right. And so, but mRNA has been in vaccines, that is, has been in research for quite some time. I don't remember the number of years, but it's not as if this was a completely off the cuff brand new thing. And keep in mind, like, this isn't our first coronavirus we've dealt with. Not that there have been 19 others. No, I forget the full thing. But COVID-19 is, it's named 19 is because it was
2019.
Right, exactly.
Right. Despite what Kellyanne Conway says.
One of the other things of, like, why this has gone so fast in comparison to other vaccines is A, all the research that's been done beforehand, but B, also funding. Like, there are so many scientific breakthroughs waiting in the wings because we just don't fund them.
Oh, we threw money at this.
Bert.
Did I just steal what you were going to say, Christy?
You're good.
I was going to mention, I'm genuinely curious about this, and I hope... you know, if the editors at the New York Times are listening to us on their coffee break, as they usually do, or Washington Post, looking at you, Jeffy B, if people who fall more on the lighter skeptical side of vaccines knew that this is not a brand new concoction, that it's basically probably over three quarters the same as the flu shot, if they knew, like, that's what this was. It's not a brand new thing from the ground up. It's a modified version of the flu shot, basically. If that would change their mind or perspective any, if they like, okay, so it's not some weird chemical cocktail. It's something that we get, something similar to what we get every year, if that would change their minds any.
No.
I can have hope.
Christy has thoughts.
One word little things going on. I love it. I love
actually,
it.
Why not?
Well, I think you have to really take into account the whole reason behind why there's an anti-vaccination movement, and a lot of that is emotion-driven, not necessarily what they know or don't know.
I would agree with that. I've seen more of that soft skepticism come from people who are not skeptics. These people would not really fall into that camp of being hard anti-vaccination types. So it's almost like you've got multiple levels of severity. And I'm talking about that top level of people who are saying, oh, well, we'll wait for the first round or we'll wait for the first, we'll see how it goes. You know, in every other aspect, they don't seem to be, you know, they vaccinated their children. They get Hep C, Hep A, whatever the regular kind of battery of vaccines are. I wonder if the fact that this is not a brand new approach, if that would change their mind any.
Well, here's not to put you guys on the spot or anyone else in this room, but what is your personal view? Like you guys specifically?
Well, that's interesting because as the healthcare professional, I did have a fair amount of anxiety about getting my vaccine, which was funny for me to think about emotionally and cognitively. Like, okay, no, I understand the reason behind vaccines. I understand the reason behind this vaccine. So I'm going to do the responsibility and get the vaccination. But that rhetoric that is so pervasive, I mean, it has an effect. So even knowing what I know, I still had an emotional response of, so what's actually going to happen when I get this vaccine?
Sure.
And it's funny to talk with other healthcare professionals because there have been a number of ones that I know of that have opted out or opted to wait, which I get, but is also unfortunate since we're the ones that are supposed to be leading, you know, this movement. But
I don't know. I guess I never.
Well, you were vaccinated as a kid, I'm assuming.
Yeah, full battery.
So your parents were into that. Growing up, I don't know if you had a need to continue on some of those.
Like, I got as many as they could give me.
I know there's some that like do occur. And that's the other thing. I'm not really familiar with like the schedule.
Other thing is if you get a degree in healthcare or something like that, you're going to have to get them all again anyway. So,
because, oh, really?
Yeah, I had to get, funny story, apparently the MMR vaccine that was given in 1991, which I got, was not super effective. So when they tested my titers, I had to get the whole series again just to get my degree. So
interesting.
And depending on where you want to work, if you're going to work in a hospital or other things, then you're most likely going to have to get vaccinated.
Right.
So if you're working in an environment that required it, I'm guessing the answer would be yes, you'd go do whatever was required, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Like just absolutely. Simply. So, and then the next question would be, well, in regards to the COVID vaccine specifically, was there hesitation?
With me?
Yeah.
Not from I don't know about the science, not from a kind of quote-unquote anti-vaccination standpoint. Part of the hesitation was it wasn't kind of, I guess, phased in. You know, I'm 30-year-old, healthy, white male. I'm at the bottom of that list.
Consequences of the vaccine versus consequences of the actual disease.
Exactly. I think it's what you're saying. Yeah. I guess I didn't really have hesitation. I mean, I wasn't, trying to be the first in line when it was available. But I did. I got both shots of Moderna. So I didn't really have a hesitation about it.
Well, I'm just saying it kind of speaks to that whole like levels of speculation, levels of hesitation, where it's like someone like yourself who is, if I need it for a job, I just go get whatever I needed.
Right.
This one, there was a slight pause, but it was only really because of like, well, it is
availability.
Brand new. Its availability is limited.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like
the the supply was not there.
Right. Yeah, and that's kind of how I felt too. Like I did as much research as I could, and like because I work in a space that's related to a lot of these companies that have developed the vaccine, though I'm on a very different side of it. And knowing how much rigor that has to go into these vaccines that are all the testing that goes on beforehand, all these sorts of things, I trusted it a bit more. Now, for me, I have no underlying health conditions that I really know of aside from a pollen allergy, which makes springtime suck right now. Thank goodness for generic brand Allegra. It has saved
hashtag
me
not
so
sponsored.
Much. Hashtag not sponsored yet. And I would gladly be sponsored by
lifetime supply of Allegra.
Oh, man. Saved me so much money. And I had the chance through the organization that I volunteer with, I had the chance to get one of the vaccines. And I opted not to because I'm not exposed very often. I am quite healthy. And I, like, my goal was originally to make sure that other people who were on that side of the schedule could make sure and get it. Now I just actually literally today just got my second shot.
You feel that 5G kicking in?
Yeah, man, I hope so. I could use some better reception.
What if the lie instead of, oh, they're tracking us, was it'll boost your Wi-Fi?
I'd be so in.
So many more people.
Everyone under 40 would be lined up around the block.
Yeah, well, you've seen the white van running around here where it's like they crossed out free candy. It says free Wi-Fi now. Have you seen this?
That would hook a lot of people.
It would tempt me occasionally. But if we're expanding this even to the whole pandemic, right?
Sure.
Like, at the beginning of this, I was a little skeptical of, you know, how harshly we locked down, especially because I was in the Bay Area when...
Well, you were in a large metropolitan area.
Yeah.
As opposed to here where we were kind of-ish rural. Like, we're not rural, but we're not big city.
You're not a super...
No.
We're
not Seattle.
Yeah, we're not a super dense city. And so, but, like, the Bay Area also just overall was harsher on their lockdowns. Not as draconian as a lot of people would make it out to be. I mean, you want to talk about rhetoric. There was a lot of hyperbole, in my opinion.
Sure.
Especially when it comes to the ministry space. Like, I had some misgivings about it at first. And I still kind of wonder, like, did we handle it? Did we overreact? And I think it was Dr. Fauci who said this, or at least popularized it. Like, you know, I hope that we look back on it and we say that we overreacted because the alternative is much worse.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's the problem is you're, as a governing body, there's no immediate win.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Because if you overreact.
We won't know about this for another 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you go too hard and you get the response we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You go too soft on it and maybe twice as many people pass away from it.
Yeah.
So,
and that's actually the interesting part, right? We are within the range of expected, you know, death count worldwide. Like, it's unfortunately these metrics and these like simulations that we can put together are scarily accurate.
Right.
They can be. Yeah. And it's, well, and the other thing is like, you know, you hear, granted, people take information, they misconstrue it, but there's people out there who say like, there were supposed to be millions of people dead. Why aren't there millions of people dead? Because we did the lockdowns.
We got a handle.
And so, like, rolling back into kind of vaccines, like, yeah, I got all of my vaccines growing up. My mom was a nurse. Funny story, when we, because my folks are missionaries also, and I was 2 years old when we were moving to South America, and my mom, the nurse, decided, hey, I'll give Jake a shot for one of his vaccines while he's asleep.
Yeah.
Bad idea.
Not a good idea.
Parents, don't do that. It's a bad idea. I woke up and... Mm-mm.
You want to talk about trust issues? Mm-hmm. My goodness.
Yeah. she learned her lesson. But it's, you know, I was just, you know, vaccines were part of a thing. And like I think it's also a bit of a generational thing by and large. COVID, I think, is a little bit different.
It's actually not.
Really?
Yes.
Because I was thinking that it was more like, you know, I was towards the end of the whole idea of like vaccines are just a standard good, but
so the interesting thing, and this was part of the research I had done in my master's program. There's always been a thread of what we would now say is anti-vaccination sentiment.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It just has ebbed and waned, I guess, waxed and waned, whatever. It has come and gone and been more or less intensive.
Well, now, I also feel like we have more information in front of us in this day and age, right?
But
with the invention of the internet.
It doesn't matter. See, that's the problem. We have information, both positive and negative.
Well, I was thinking more just the reporting of people who are actually not vaccinating. Because previously, yes, it would have been like, you know, very isolated groups.
Very small collective.
Middle of nowhere.
Information didn't spread as quickly.
But now we're suddenly aware of it.
People
are not vaccinated.
There was anti-vaccination sentiment when vaccines or the idea of inoculation was like first coming out. You guys don't want to know what they did in the 1500s to quote unquote vaccinate people.
Yeah.
Think of the grossest thing you can. It's that.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably that.
Eating poop?
No. I don't want to say what it is. It's not that. but
something terrible.
Even during the Spanish flu, there was still a big sentiment, I guess you could say, a big presence of, you know, of skepticism, of not wearing masks, of not getting this, and not, you know, oh, it's all overblown. So there's always been a skepticism, or a skeptical element, I should say, of any type of push that comes from a governmental or larger institutional standpoint. And this is really where we can get into the, you know, kind of the rhetoric behind it. It's just now it's easier to make it public and make it obvious and capitalize on it.
Right. Sure. So, Christy, since you work in healthcare and you work in a fairly specialized sector of healthcare, what's your experience been around not just with yourself, but like some of your clients?
The majority of my clients are not opting for vaccination. Mm-hmm. So, but I also work in North Idaho.
There's also that.
So I think there's going to be an element of geographical influence on whether or not this has been a sentiment before COVID happened already, which is very much true for the area that I work in. And then you add on COVID on top of that, and it's just kind of amplified what people are already feeling, especially with all the lockdowns and everything, because there's kind of a control issue now on what you're telling me I can and cannot do, which then brings out people's resistance a little bit more.
Right? Yeah, no one likes to do when they're told to do something, right?
Right. Which it's funny because as kids, that's what we work with, what I work with. But it's funny that as adults, it's very much the same thing for everyone else.
It's actually interesting because that's actually part of my experience. So being an IT consultant, I had paperwork available from the state of Washington to actually go get my vaccine back in January. And every time someone asked me if I was going to go do it, the answer was, just to annoy them. Like it was annoyance to me for one.
Right.
But
you know, to be asked.
To be asked. Yeah. Right. And it was obviously that was the topic, right? Like the first thing you ever, you know, it's like, oh, hey, how you been? How's the wife? How's the kids? You got shot yet? You know, it's just part of that vernacular now. Mm-hmm. And there are a few people in specific that were like, well, you know, if I had the chance, I'd go do it. Well, good for you. You know, enjoy yourself. Mm-hmm. I agree with the sentiment of I wanted to make sure there were dosing for the people who are actually, you know, in some level of need.
Right.
Because I am not. Like, again, much like you guys, middle of my life, decently healthy, overweight. Just me, not you guys.
Three of the four of us in this room currently also work primarily from home.
Absolutely. And so I wasn't exposed to a lot of stuff. I had that absolute option to just not go outside, and it was perfectly fine.
Right.
And so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a high priority in my world. And it just was bolstered by the fact of everyone and their mother being like, hey, are you going to get vaccinated? Hey, why aren't you vaccinated yet? Hey, if you have the option, why wouldn't you do it?
I'm going to throw a monkey wrench into this.
Go for it.
Is this problematic?
Oh, absolutely it is.
If this sentiment that we have here of, I'm not really at risk, for me it's not really a priority, does that...
Now, I will say, I signed up...
Does that turn down the intensity and the need? Because, yes, we might not be high on that list of priorities to get the vaccine, but we're still part of this overall society.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so are we not contributing to the health of this overall society by not even expressing skepticism, but just expressing can't be bothered?
I was going to say, yes. just lethargy, right?
Laziness.
Well, and that.
Well, it's. I think it's less laziness and more just apathy.
Well, and then that could very well be. Now, well, I did, as soon as it was released for the state of Washington, I found myself a site and I got signed up, and 3 days later I got stabbed. But yeah, it was. What, you can use colorful words for being vaccinated.
No, I know, but in Spokane, you got to be specific.
True, especially in the areas I was in. Anyways, so, but it was one of the things, like, as soon as they said general public is now acceptable, it's like, oh, I don't necessarily feel like this is going to be a problem. I need to go do it.
Right.
Now, I did research. This is the first time I've ever researched a vaccine. This is the first time I've ever actually researched really anything that wasn't, you know, just presented as, oh, yeah, this is a medical thing. It's been going on for years. Go do it. You know, I got my Hep C vaccine back in 2003 because I was working predominantly with hospitals as an IT coordinator. And one of the requirements for one of them was I got to get my Hep C. There was no question in my mind. It was, oh, down the hall to the left. Yeah, great. Okay.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. Like for me too is like, you know, I worked food, and when you're working food, you have to get your Hep shots.
Yep.
And again, didn't even think of it. The only question that I had was, again, my mom, the nurse, kept horrible vaccination records for me. And so I'm pretty sure whichever one's the permanent one, I can't remember which, but I'm pretty sure I've had that twice, if not three times.
It's okay. It's permanent.
It's not really going to hurt anything.
190.
So much, Jake.
It's good. And that's the thing. I feel there's a lot more skepticism around the COVID vaccine specifically because it is newer. It's also coming at a time when a lot of people, like if this was when I was 20, sure, stab me. I don't care. Whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it would have been that big of a thought process for me. But as I am getting older, as I am dealing with like my parents being old, dealing with the general populace, it was definitely a question of, okay, first off, is this effective? You know, that was actually one of my first questions when I was doing research was, if I go get vaccinated, what kind of efficacy rate are we looking at here? Because if it doesn't work, then what's the point? Mm. You know, I will say I am not a fan of flu vaccines. I don't get them. I never leave the house.
I've never gotten a flu shot.
Yeah, I did it once. I felt like crap, which is apparently is normal. And, you know, it's your body reacting. And it was one of those things like, why would I do that when I work at home? I don't generally go out. And it's never affected me. Now, as my parents have started getting older, it has started crossing my mind that if I'm going to go hang out with them during the flu season, that even though, yes, I might have it and I might shake it off, it might not work the same way for them.
Right. And so that's kind of the biggest argument on like why folks should get their vaccines.
Absolutely.
Well, especially saying a minute ago, you know, mm-hmm. we're elements of this machine that we mm-hmm. call society. Should right. we not do our part as well?
Especially if we can, right? Because there are people who can't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that was really apparent to me when I was doing my research was the fact that it's not about me. Mm-hmm. It's about everyone else.
Are we getting into morals and ethics again?
We are a little bit, but it's the fact that we have almost a duty mm-hmm. to make sure that our society as a whole continues to survive. Mm-hmm. And that includes the ability for us to not infect those who can't be vaccinated or not infect those who are too, you know, in the risk groups of being too old to have the abilities or not having access mm-hmm. even. I mean, there was a great example of one of our friends downtown who definitely checked 3 of the 4 boxes, but only 3 of the 4 boxes, and therefore was not eligible for the vaccine.
Right.
Luckily, we ended up getting her over to Idaho where they had extra dosing and got her in kind of, you know, hey, we just need her. And what was the fascinating part about it was I talked to her afterwards and the questionnaire they had asked, you know, her when she got there was like, oh, do you have any of these things? And she checked 3 of the boxes and they're like, oh my goodness, how come you haven't been vaccinated? And the answer was, well, I'm not eligible. And they were just appalled by that. You mm-hmm. know, and Idaho was the same problem. They didn't also check all the boxes.
Sure.
But it was fascinating that there were people that who wanted to get it, who couldn't get it, which was just weird to me. There were people who couldn't get it that didn't want it anyways, which is perfectly fine. And then there were the people who didn't want it and got it anyways because mm-hmm. they felt obligated to, which good for them.
Right.
Well, and that's the hard part, especially working with a population of kids that is medically fragile. And a lot of these kids aren't going to be able to get the vaccine.
Right.
Well, I was going to say, I haven't done research, but we haven't approved anything below 16-year-olds, right?
Right. And the big issue is that so many of these kids are going to depend on herd immunity. And essentially by advocating for my rights and my choice, and I'm not going to do this, you are taking that choice from them.
Absolutely.
Because they are depending on you and to do what you need to do to keep them safe.
It goes back to that whole social responsibility thing.
Yes.
So we're asking people to think of other people?
I know
it's always been risky.
I know it's weird, and I know that it's not human nature to
no.
think of others first, you know, but think of it more along the lines of it's still beneficial to you if your tribe survives.
But it's mm-hmm. But it's a longer term, less explicit, less material benefit.
Oh, absolutely. It's
so
trying to actually materialize that.
Do it.
Absolutely.
That's part of the issue. I think we've got a cocktail of issues here that are really working against this.
Mm-hmm.
One being that kind of, you know, fierce independence to a pathological, in this case, degree. The other is this immature skepticism. And the other is a growing, and this has been talked about for the last probably half dozen years, growing skepticism and distrust of institutions.
Oh, absolutely.
And then when you've got the vaccine coming out that is being pushed by the government and being pushed by the big pharma, surprising anyone got it at all.
Well, it's hard to be in alignment with those types of things because you've heard horrible things in the past, right?
Yeah, and rightfully so. Like there was a big, early on when vaccines were coming out, there was a big kind of, you know, hand wringer about people in minority communities accepting the vaccine, because as history has shown us, you know, they're usually the first ones to be subjugated or tested, literally tested on, if we look at Tuskegee. Yep. If you're an older black person, I understand being a little skeptical, because the American government did some really horrible things to people in your generation within your lifetime, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, for me, being an upper middle class white guy, I have no reason to be that skeptical of the government, you know, but there are still people in that, you know, set of demographics that are like, oh, big government, you know.
Well, there's still the question. I mean, and I would say that it's not less legitimate, but it's there's more questions on our side that I feel are more intrinsic of, well, we trust the government. We assume that they're right because generally we trust them more. And it wasn't like in my experience and the people I've talked to, I don't feel it was ever a question of, do we trust if it's actually a vaccine, or do we trust if it's actually going to help us? It was really just the question of, do I really want to do this and potentially have side effects? Because we don't know. Their testing is limited, and we know that their testing is limited. My personal favorite is, one of my friends was on the fence about getting vaccinated. I ended up pushing them over the edge, and they said, okay, fine. I mean, it wasn't hard. It was just one of those, well, I don't know if I can really take time out of my day. I'm like, I'm free right now. I'll take it right now. Oh, okay, let's go. You know, and it was just one of those things. Well, I immediately got a text from him that's like, hey, ABC says that this thing's only good for 6 months. We're going to need boosters. And I said, reread that headline. They know it only works for 6 months, because I'll give you a hint. It's only been around for 6 months. That's like saying, I turned on a light bulb, it worked for an hour. We might need to get more. It's only worked for an hour. You're right. Right.
See, I'm going to break out the big media stick here.
Do it. Hit me, daddy.
Oh, man. I don't. You guys are destroying my train of thought. Part of that problem is how clickbaity headlines get. I remember I was scrolling through even CNN, which is not one of those media outlets where you would expect this kind of flashy sentiment. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, you know, it was talking about the blood clots around Johnson & Johnson, I think. Sure. And it's like, oh, six people. Well, the problem is, six people out of how many millions?
It was within the tolerance, not to
exactly
down, you know,
it doesn't matter though. It doesn't matter.
Only six people did they die?
Any loss of life, yeah. Right? I agree.
But right.
The point is that when you get sensationalist headlines like that, and sensationalist headlines are not a new thing.
No.
When you tie them to a scientific realm, that's when it gets especially dangerous, because people are going to identify with that, whether or not it's realistic for them to identify with it. Because anybody can trace, like, oh, my aunt's great uncle's brother had a stroke. I might get it, you know. Yeah. They'll play 6 degrees of separation in an immature, skeptical way that then talks themselves out of getting this because, oh, well, I don't want to, you know, when you have a better chance of winning the lottery or getting hit by lightning, then, fun fact, not that uncommon.
Actually not.
Your
actually
odds not. Of getting hit by lightning, 1 in 300,000.
If memory serves, there's a decent number of people who've been struck multiple times.
Yeah, right? There's a golfer who's been hit 11 times. Anyway, the point is,
I mean, when you're using a giant lightning rod.
I know, yeah, who would have thought, standing in a field with a metal pole. The point is, if you look at how often a scary scenario is realized, but you look at how often that scary scenario is portrayed, it's horribly skewed.
Oh, absolutely.
Horribly skewed. And the funny thing is that
all
even
the media
our
issues.
That's, yeah, that's, you know, true.
The thing is, like, it's sensationalized. It always has been. My personal favorite, I always like to bring up when we come into this conversation about the media just overusing something. Back in the day, and I don't remember how long ago it was at this point. It's been a couple of decades at least. Mm-hmm. It's always around Halloween time. And it's always razor blades in the apple.
Never
razor
actually happened.
Oh, it did.
Oh, it did.
It actually happened. Did. So what it was it was the parent of the kids' friend or some stupid thing. And he did it purposely because he's a sociopath and was trying to hurt the kid. Mm-hmm. But it was explicit. It was targeted. It was a single person. But every single year since then, we've heard about make sure you check your kids' candy. Anybody could be doing this. Oh, everyone's
they might be handing out drugs. No one is giving drugs to kids. Drugs are expensive.
Tell me where that neighborhood is, and I will.
Oh, I will absolutely go trick or treat.
Oh,
yeah, house.
We will be the old peoples.
Right.
So, Christy, I have a question for you as a healthcare type person. Mm-hmm. Do your clients ever ask if everyone in the facility that you work in is vaccinated? Like, is that a push at all?
No.
They don't care? Or they just don't ask?
I think maybe one client has been concerned about people being vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
See, I feel like that would be a huge item. If I'm going to bring my family into an office for any reason, whether it be, you know, medical or otherwise, one of my first questions is going to be what's the percentage of staffers here that are vaccinated?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And actually, the opposite issue was a thing where
really
one family wanted to wait a while because they weren't sure what the benefits or if I was going to be contagious when I was vaccinated or mm-hmm. whatnot. And then I switched clinics partway through COVID, right?
Sure.
And there was more backlash over the requirement of families needing to wear masks in the facility than there was about vaccination. So really, we're in this area that's very much you are infringing on my rights. More than mm-hmm. anyone cares about whether or not we are vaccinated.
About their own health.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess.
Which is why it's our job as the healthcare professionals to make sure we are getting vaccinated to take care of.
Well, you have the responsibility, right?
It is our responsibility to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So in our facility, I think the majority of us are vaccinated. There are a couple that are not.
And of course, you know, we look at other types of organizations. WSU, I believe, just announced that they're not letting students back next year, 2022, without vaccination cards.
Really?
Probably fall of 21.
Maybe fall of 21. That's good. What it was. I know Eastern is looking at implementing something of the same. I've know that Washington University is also looking at the same. But it's interesting because I'm very curious with the backlash that we've seen with masks, what kind of backlash is going to be created when, you know, you walk up to the movie theater and like, oh, do you have your vaccine card and your ID?
There was an article in The Atlantic about that the other day about, and of course it's in The Atlantic. Full disclosure, I actually really like The Atlantic. I think it's a great publication, but sometimes it gets a little SJW. The article was
Read them, so I guess I'm just the unbiased one.
I mean, yeah, you like it. This article was talking about how vaccine passports is what they're calling them now.
Mm-hmm. God.
Will discriminate against people who, you know, can't get the vaccine, which technically, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're ever going to have a perfect world where everyone has completely equitable access to everything.
Right.
Well, like but, as we said, some people can't, right? Some people don't have that ability.
Yeah. Because, like, Christy, you were mentioning that a lot of your clients are, what was the term, medically sensitive?
Medically fragile.
Medically fragile. And so, you know, a good portion of your clients were something that draconian to be put into effect would be ineligible for a lot of things.
I think personally there's going to have to be caveats where you are able to show that, no, I don't have the vaccine, but this is why. Mm-hmm. Not just because opted out and I don't want it, but because I have XYZ and I'm not actually eligible to get the vaccine.
Well, and we have precedents for that today.
Right.
You know, there are schools that require vaccines unless there's an exception for religious or medical or other. You know, and as I think that would apply for this, you know, vaccine passport or whatever, where you just simply get it stamped as medically ineligible and you still have it.
Right.
And it's presentable. It's just not you're vaccinated.
Right. And to that point, this isn't exactly something that's incredibly new. Now, the way we're talking about are some entities and especially talking heads are talking about how it would be rolled out. You know,
did they tell you to get your card laminated after when you were getting your shot?
No,
they did at mine.
I should do that, though. That makes sense.
Well,
I just keep mine in the glove box.
Well, that was it. They're like, hang on to this because you need it for the second one.
Uh-huh.
OK, fine. And they said, after you get the second one, go Office Depot. And I think Staples are laminating for free.
Oh, good to know that.
And I'm just like,
or just give it to me since I have a laminator.
There you go.
I'll do it.
There we go.
Just fold it up in my wallet.
Well, first off, that thing does not fit anywhere, by the way. That thing
it's really bad. They should have made a business card wallet, size.
Because my wallet is ridiculous.
I mean, like, aside from mostly public schools, I think, saying, like, hey, your kid needs to be vaccinated, that, like, here, I don't think my folks ever had to give vaccination records to my schools. Clearly not, because my mom took horrible vaccination records. There might have been a couple like required ones, like measles.
Oh, I had to, this is for Eastern, I had to show copies of my vaccination record for
to go there as a student or?
As an employee.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And when I went to grad school, Auburn required proof of TB, whether I'd had the vaccine or it was either a proof of vaccine or titers. Which kind of makes sense. TB is extremely contagious. Kind of like Corona.
That's the thing is like the whole reason why there's this big push again is not not for you to be healthy. Like, the state really honestly doesn't care about you as an individual.
You're not helping our case here, Jake.
it doesn't care about you, which is why you should care about you.
Right. It doesn't care so much about you as an individual as it does the whole populace, right?
Well, it cares about its tax income.
Precisely. I mean, if we're just looking at it like that. And so, I mean, this...
want to get really brutally...
Sorry,
I side with Jake a little bit. I do think there are genuinely good people in
government. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't think that everybody is evil, as we have talked about on yet another unreleased episode that I think we're actually going to release. I don't believe in... or I find it very unlikely that there's a huge amount of pure evil. And I just look at it more from a perspective of, like, the government exists to perpetuate itself. And if the large portion of the populace is suddenly unable to support the government, i.e. dead, that's a huge problem for the government. And so, like, the whole reason why vaccinations are really being pushed is for the health of the community, not the health of the individual.
Again, it goes back to the tribe, right? Like, mm-hmm. keeping your tribe happy and healthy. And that might be your local social circle. It might be your monkey sphere. It might be your entire nation. It doesn't really matter. The idea is that it's not just for you. Mm-hmm. It is for the greater good of the group, whether that group involves you and who's in your household, you and who's in your city, or even your nation state, or even the world. I mean, mm-hmm. at some point we will be a, hopefully, multiple planetary species, which would be really cool.
And then we
can have all kinds of fun wars between the Earth and everywhere else, right? Because we're going to do that, because we're dumb.
You get to be Wally. You can stay on the planet as Wally.
He's going to fly to Mars with Jeffy B and Elon.
Oh. Dude, I signed up for that. They didn't take me. I was fat.
Oh my gosh. And on that note, I think it's time for a scotch break.
This is your regularly scheduled scotch break.
So what are we talking tonight?
So scotch break. One of the things that comes up a lot of the times when you talk about whiskeys and scotch, and actually like
Let's get her reaction.
Yes. We have a non-scotch drinker with us.
We do.
Oh my God. Yes, and, I'm over here, but we also have Christy.
That reaction was to Ainsley Bray, but we're still drinking.
Fire.
So Christy does like not tank. Usually drink scotch or whiskey.
Or anything,
really. Yes, we are still continuing to drink Ainsley Bray. We just polished off our second bottle. Well, bottle and a half, because we started
this not
podcast with just half a bottle that I had for Christmas. One of the things that you often hear talked about in the world of whiskey, and especially like finer whiskeys as you're trying to get into that culture, is the color of the whiskey. So a few weeks back, or a few episodes back, one of the things that we talked about were these Glencairn glasses, and Griff and I are drinking out of them again tonight.
They're magical.
I think they kind of are. Like, it makes it hit on your tongue a little bit differently. You get more of the flavors, more of the nose when you want to smell it, that sort of thing. But even on the boxes for these glasses, it talks about the color. What is color of whiskey? Well, I mean, whiskey is brown.
Amber.
In the brown family.
Coca-Cola is brown.
Fair. But a lot of times you hear people talk about, the color is so...
Apparently. Some scotches are lighter, too. It depends on the barrel that they're aged in.
Well, exactly. And that's kind of the point.
Yellow.
So that's kind of the thing is, what is color? And so doing a little bit of research is I've also been trying to get more and more into the world of whiskey. Color as like a grade for how good a whiskey is.
Did you say couleur?
Color.
Did you just throw like a UK accent on it? What was that?
No, I just don't
definitely
talk
Southern
good sometimes.
South American.
Okay. Color.
Well, sorry. We're going to get canceled for this.
I'm going to cancel please, you all myself.
Please edit that out.
Except most.
But color is actually just kind of BS. So a lot of the times people think that a darker colored whiskey is better. Right. Now, in some cases, it gets darker just because of the aging, but actually the color comes so much more from things like just the type of wood that it was aged in or anything like that. But you
can get... Some of them have a preference based on the wood type, which happens to be a darker color.
Is it usually oak?
Yes, barrels. But not always. Basically, what it comes down to is, you're right, Russ, personal preference. There are some really light-colored whiskeys that actually taste quite well. In our particular case, Ainsley Bray, the one that we've been raving about, which is pretty damn good for a $25 scotch.
It depends on what state you buy it in.
fair, is actually a pretty light color for a lot of like the nicer style scotches or whiskeys.
I'd say it's very similar to apple juice.
I was going
to
say,
its color.
Mm-hmm. But you can get really
kind of
dark.
That golden.
Mm-hmm. But even some of the more aged stuff actually has a lighter color. So in the end, to summarize, don't worry about the color of your whiskey. Find something that you like and go for it.
Don't see color. Sorry, that's...
Wrong episode.
You'd have to edit so much more of this episode than I planned on.
You're welcome.
I warned you.
Well,
so getting back to our original topic on vaccine rhetoric, one of the things that I found interesting, and Griff, you kind of touched on this a little bit, is that there this vaccine hesitancy or skepticism, depending on
apathy?
What degree we're talking about.
It's not apathy. It is.
Is it true skepticism? And that's the interesting part, right? The idea that if you're going to get it and you want to get it, that's a good thing, right? Or at least that's the positive side. But that's the smaller percentage. Mm-hmm. Everything else is, I don't want to get it. I don't know if I should get it. And that's where the real problem comes in. It's not just the people who are, no, I don't want it. It's the I'm not sure people who also aren't getting it.
Right. And one of the things that came up is like most of us in this room are centrist to left leaning.
Sure.
Arguably.
We still haven't had that episode, Jake.
We still haven't. But when we talk about vaccine hesitancy and we talk about like political leanings, most of us in this room are center to center left. And a lot of the stuff that you see online, especially because most websites become echo chambers of themselves.
Well, sure, you search for what you're looking for, right?
Right, exactly.
And the algorithms take over.
Right, and from the more left-leaning sites that I tend to follow, looking at you, Reddit, there's this sentiment that, like, oh, Republicans, they don't want to get it because they're Republicans, or all Republicans are anti-vax, or, like, any
not
number
true.
Of that. Exactly. True. See, one of the things that this article that I referenced earlier on the podcast from the New York Times is, like, somebody responded to, basically, to that question of, like, are you not getting it because you're a Republican? Which is such reductivist thinking.
What a bizarre question, in my opinion.
I know, but that is...
I voted
that
for Romney. Vaccines are bad.
Yeah, like, that's kind of that, the...
No,
I mean, I guess
that is a...
Well, no, I mean, just in general, like,
gross
political
satirization.
Leaning, I don't feel like that would ever, like, in my opinion, that shouldn't ever enter
well, this
into
is,
the decision.
No,
right?
this is the thing. I think I might jump to Jake's point here. I apologize, but this is kind of what we're talking about more towards the beginning of the episode. It's not so much that I vote Republican, therefore I don't get a vaccine. It's not.
Or is it just that anti-vaxxers are more predominantly Republican?
I think it kind of falls evenly.
Yeah.
Right. And back to my original point, there's a lot of Republican sentiment is like, I'm not, you know, Republicans aren't anti-vax or specifically talking about the COVID vaccine.
Yeah.
The COVID vaccine was introduced under Trump's presidency and it was pushed by Trump. Now, there's a lot of caveats to go along with that, but they're not doing it because Biden's pushing it. Or they're not skeptics because Biden's pushing it. And so that's kind of the thing that, like, when we talk about vaccine rhetoric, and because I am, by and large, pro-vaccine, do I think that we need to be judicious in the way that we approach things? Absolutely. I mean, history has taught us that. And the other thing that we have to remember is that science is an iterative process.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why we have skepticism, not just around the COVID vaccine, but around a lot of the protocols that we've taken over the last year has been that the stuff that comes out of some of our scientific bodies changes.
Sure.
And that's because we learn more.
Well, and that was the interesting part, especially during COVID, right? The whole CDC releasing information as they kind of found out about it.
Mm-hmm.
And all these people, you know, crying from the rooftops, oh, why are they changing their story? Why is now we have to wear a mask? Now we right. shouldn't wear a mask. Now we have to be six right. feet of, you know. And I'm like, it's because we're learning different things? Like what?
Right.
When did you think that science was static? I mean, yeah, the 1974 textbook when you were in school in 1991, it was kind of static. But as far as the real world is concerned, we are constantly evolving, constantly learning about new things that are happening.
Right.
And we try to adjust our trajectory based on that. If we don't, we're dumb. I mean,
the other element of that too, and this was the thesis of that half of my portfolio, was the nature in which the scientific community communicates its research and communicates its findings is inherently non-committal.
Sure.
Not to say that, you know, it's rife with problems or it's rife with, you know, fallacy, it's not invaluable. Part of what makes a respected scientific publication a respected scientific publication is that it leaves room for improvement. You'll never see a published peer-reviewed scientific article saying, you know, something in basically in black and white.
Well, right. No, they'll always steer away from absolutes, right?
Exactly. They frame it in the context of their study, mm-hmm. and they frame it in the context of their methodology.
Well, they better. I mean, that's...
Well, they have to. One, because that's the nature of the scientific process, but the other is because that's how you get published. That's how you get legitimate, authentic scientific
research. Well, it's given this data, these are our conclusions, thus our
problem. The problem, which is the flip side of that coin, is that the public, by and large, does not like uncertainty, especially in times that are high fear, which I would say the pandemic is.
Because
we had a lot of a very scary, uncertain time. When you say, oh, this is a scary, uncertain time, how many times a day did you hear in these uncertain times? The last thing you want is for the scientific community, the people who are your, you know, I almost want to say hesitantly, they'd put their trust in the scientific community saying, you know, yeah, this is what we found in our studies. You know, we're not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
When people are looking for a solid ground and the institution that they're looking to that traditionally has been that solid ground is saying, I mean, this is our best bet. That doesn't do anything to help assuage
that's when you start getting skeptics, conspiracy.
Well, it's not only when you start getting skeptics and conspiracy, but it's also when you start getting anecdotal evidence that begins to usurp scientific, because anecdotal evidence is much closer and much more personal. It's in your proximity. So if I'm just the average person, and I'm not going to say, oh, it's the mommy bloggers, because that puts them, that's
what now?
Mommy bloggers.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. The soccer Anyways. Mom is the Karens. Is the favorite.
I take issue with calling everyone Karen.
As you should, but anyway.
Personalized stories like that mm-hmm. hit much closer to home. Or, sure. or having exactly well, having
they're within your social sphere, right?
Exactly. They feel more like how you would talk and think.
Well, it's not the ubiquitous science community over there.
Exactly.
It's Bill, that's where it comes three blocks over.
Exactly. That's friend's where it comes daughter. Out in proximity. you know, if get some okay, so some elitist, you know, scientist up in New York.
You'd be nice to Dr. Fauci.
Published in the New England Journal of Medicine. These people don't read the New England Journal of Medicine, you know?
Right.
But they do read the things that come up in their news feeds, and they read the things that come up in their paper, and they read the things that come up in their mm-hmm. proximity. Those artifacts are not always, surprise, surprise, really based in or contextualized in quote unquote good science. So you're getting people who are interacting with and digesting science that has been filtered through 800 layers, like a game of telephone, 800 layers of mm-hmm. other communication. And now they're hearing, oh, well, you know, this one article said that, you know, these kids showed evidence of autism around the time they got vaccinated. That's kind of where this started, this generation's skepticism of vaccines. And so when it hits closer to home, it carries more weight than when it's 5 or 6 layers removed from where you are. And that's where it gets problematic, is because the scientific community will never speak the same language as the broader societal community.
Right.
Well, and that was the issue that we saw explicitly, you know, nowadays with internet, things like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever mm-hmm. else is out there. I'm sure there's 10,000 other ones. But the idea is that you have this almost instant ability to share information with other people, but also cast within your own light. And your own social circles can cause those kind of problems. And they did attempt, no, they didn't attempt, they did. They started censoring stuff, or more appropriately, they started adding a tag to everything, yeah. simply mm-hmm. saying, this may not be true.
Yeah.
Please go check your facts.
See, but that's, you know. I think in some cases that, I don't know if that did more harm than good.
Right.
Because when you have Facebook and Instagram and Twitter putting these tags on there, basically saying, asterisk, you know, or hey,
Well, I kind of feel like everything really needed that except for official channels, right? At that point.
Even
because everyone should just agree that everything on Twitter is basically a lie unless you can prove otherwise. Right? I absolutely dislike social media because of, I mean, I yay, you can tell me about your what you ate for lunch. You can tell me about, you know, your father's gallbladder surgery. I don't care. But when you start talking about things that are already in the news, things that are especially that are supposed to be, you know, hey, what do we need to know about this as a general public? Don't.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where I'm at with it. And I don't use social media because of that. I will go back to the original source. I go to the CDC website.
Yeah.
And I read. Right. And it's like, all right, well,
and it's the, I think one of the biggest issues with that, like, yes, go do that. Like anytime I hear somebody making arguments,
please go to the official sources.
Well, not just official sources. What, you know, in the research world in general, like I'm talking English 201 in college, sure, when you have to do a research paper, we talk about these things called primary sources.
Wikipedia?
No.
Now, a little tiny text at the bottom of Wikipedia.
Yeah. Wikipedia, awesome resource. I use it all the time. I use it for summarization. I use it for a jump off point for research. But I cannot, in any form of official, and I'm not talking like a science journal, although yes, this is that's very much included, but any form of research or white paper or whatever that I'm doing, I cannot use Wikipedia directly as a source unless I'm talking about Wikipedia itself.
Yep.
Right. Now, going to and finding these primary sources, especially when we're talking about things in this realm of science, healthcare, et cetera, where there's a ton of background knowledge that you really need.
Yeah.
That type of information is incredibly inaccessible to the public.
Mostly because you have to have an EDU account.
And I'm not talking about just like, just, you know, you have to go to JSTOR and either have the
inaccessible
login.
In a lot of ways.
It's inaccessible just from a vocabulary perspective, just from an underlying
knowledge. I've read some of these like actual journal publications. I don't understand them.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember, we learned about this in grad school, but I'm pretty sure like the general population health literacy level is fourth grade. Reading is what we're mm-hmm. talking about. And mm-hmm. so you're using sure. all this health literacy lingo that means nothing to right. most people.
And in many spaces, that is absolutely necessary. Like science has its own language effectively for a reason. Scientific language is much more exacting.
Sure.
Where, you know, common use English, especially English, is, you know, you have tons of layers of connotation and colloquialism on top of that. And so I think we as a society need to start figuring out how we can bridge that properly. And this is where I get into my other side of the soapbox that I will stand on or try to until I die, is... especially when it comes to argumentation, but especially with huge issues like we're dealing with the pandemic and with vaccinations and things like that. So many times we get lost in these ad hominem attacks. We assume that the other side is less educated or literate or whatever you want to use. And we vilify that. Now, whether or not they are quote unquote less educated or not, that doesn't matter. My goal is ultimately to, and I hate even using the term attack the problem, not the person, because that feels a little bit too aggressive for me sometimes. But it comes down to, for me, ultimately, do you want to make yourself feel better? Or do you want to actually see a change? We see this from both sides. Absolutely. You know, you go to some of the protests from anti-vaxxers and it's the same sort of like, oh, you're just a sheeple. But, you know, from our side, the quote-unquote right side, theoretically, we do the exact same thing more often than we care to admit. And I get why, because it's exhausting to have a sit-down conversation to walk through all of these things, especially because we have, at least I do, and most of the people I know, have this innate feeling that we need to have all of the answers right in front of us. And so when we don't have that, it's very easy to get that defensiveness.
Sure.
And so being willing to just say like, look, I don't have the, like that particular answer. Let me go and research that and find that. And just having calm discussions and not being afraid to wade into difficult topics. Like there's this also perceived notion, and this is probably another episode that we should do, is that, you know, we can't talk about really difficult subjects, from a point where we could even be considered critiquing. And a lot of that feeling is hyperbolized, but a lot of it is there for a reason. And I think I talked this about this a little bit in our original episode, is like, because these issues have been handled rather poorly in the past, and sometimes culture reacts a little bit harshly, but we need to take a look at that as a temperature gauge and say, okay, how do we change this conversation? And I think that's absolutely an important thing to do with vaccinations and COVID protocols in general. Like, when I talk with people about it, I don't think I've shared this on the podcast before. Back when I was in San Jose, I moved back to Spokane in December of 2020. And so back when I was in San Jose, I was still attending a church that predominantly did not follow COVID protocol. And it was frustrating and it was heartbreaking. And there's a lot of stuff that I could go into on another episode. But I still, I followed it as best as I could while still trying to support the ministry. And the reasons why I kept showing up are very long and complicated. But I still wore my mask. I still, didn't sit super close to a lot of folks, or if I did, it was with the same people, et cetera, stuff like that. And it was, and occasionally I was asked, very rarely, it was a little bit assumed that I was just fearful of getting sick. But when I was actually asked, I said, look, this is, I've seen the information myself that, protocols like this help keep other people safe. I'm fine. By and large, if I get sick, I will probably survive this. It could suck, and I could lose, like, I'm a vocalist. I could lose my ability to sing completely, but I will by and large survive this. However, somebody who I expose to the virus might not be so lucky. And so that's why I keep doing these things. And that's why, even after getting my shot, I will probably continue to wear my mask out in public for quite some time until we make sure that we figure out that two reasons, that we make sure that people who have been vaccinated can't transmit. We're pretty sure we're not. But again, science is an iterative process. Yeah. We haven't finished that portion of the research yet because that wasn't the priority yet. But two, I also want to help normalize that wearing a mask for the sake of others is okay.
Well, and just wearing a mask in general. One thing that I have noticed, and interesting story as a side note to this, but I find that when I, as a business person, because I do a lot of IT consulting, I will walk into businesses, and of course I have my mask on because, one, it's mandated most of the time. Secondly, most businesses are requiring them. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just more of a, yes, I'm going to wear a mask. But it's interesting because the number of people who immediately put on their masks after I walk in. And it's not, mm-hmm. it's not like I walk in, they see me and it's like, oh, someone's here, put on a mask. It's more of 5 minutes after I've been there, they go, oh, he's wearing a mask. We probably should be.
Right.
And I find that, it is that prompt for social reaction that I think definitely helps. And so I have no intention of ever not wearing a mask when I'm in public, at least not during the pandemic seasons here. That might extend out to next year. I don't know. But I feel like it's just my responsibility to help others feel comfortable wearing masks by promoting myself, because I don't have an issue with, people. So here's the side story. I was leaving Cracker Barrel the other night.
Cracker Barrel in North Idaho.
Yes.
Which I shouldn't even say that, because, see, we're talking about rhetoric again.
Yes.
And that was me kind of taking a dump on North Idaho. Well, I shouldn't do that.
When it's there.
Cracker Barrel anywhere, you'd have this problem. Right? No.
I don't know that it's necessarily taking a dump on... I don't know that it's necessarily taking a dump on
the
North
connotation
Idaho.
That I had, though.
Okay, that's fair. But I think it is reasonable to say, North Idaho, in general, has a certain perspective.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people are not wearing masks. Right. A lot of people don't care to.
Exactly. And that is their prerogative as that populace. Yep. They've decided mm-hmm. this is what we want. This is why we live here. And I think there's nothing wrong with being able to point that out, that, I was wearing a mask in North Idaho, and that comes with a certain understanding of what is going to happen. Yeah,
there's a stigma there.
That's true.
And I was walking out of Cracker Barrel, and this lovely family, two parents, three kids, one of the younger children looked up and said, "Why is that man wearing a mask?" And from over my shoulder, I heard, "Don't worry, he's just a maskivist. He's dumb." And they kept walking. And of course I kept walking because I'm like, we're not going to have this conversation right now. But it made me stop for a second, not physically, but mentally, to be like, what just happened here?
Yeah.
You got othered.
I did. I was totally othered. I am no longer part of the North Idaho group, apparently, that normally would not wear a mask.
Well, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt your rest, but this is my biggest issue with being on polar opposite sides, right? Of like, pro-mask, anti-mask, all these things, sure, is it dehumanizes it. Mm. Like, everyone has their own perspectives, their own personal history, their own whatever that makes them come to these decisions. So being able to lump you up into, oh, he's just a maskivist, he's dumb.
I love that word, by the way. I've never heard of that before.
It's like, no, what is that? But that frustrates me just as much as the people on our side who get frustrated when we see people without masks, like,
oh yeah,
you're dumb, why aren't you wearing a mask? And I'm like, there are perspectives. Oh, it's the same both issue ends. Yeah, how about we just issue treat each other like humans with perspectives?
We can't do that.
My pushback is that I have a hard time caring about I'm not sure how to say
just
this.
Just leave it at that. I have a hard time caring.
I have a hard time caring about people. I have a hard time caring about all of the instances in someone's history or something,
sure,
that has led to that. If the action you are taking is wrong, because while we can debate and while we can fudge, you know, and contextualize and rationalize and try to do all these isings, at the end of the day, this is what the research says. You are doing something that is contrary to the research. Therefore, you're wrong. And I know the human condition and human experience is not nearly ever black and white, but there are rare instances when it is. And this is one of those. And I'm sorry if that makes me sound, actually, I'm not sorry if that makes me sound like a cynic or a hard ass, because you're wrong. That's all there is to it. Oh, well, he's a masochist, he's dumb. No, he's doing what the larger scientific community has proven and shown to have proven is the right thing in this context. And I'm not even arguing morally or ethically or whatever. It is fact that by wearing some sort of face covering, you are reducing the likelihood of a spread of an illness, period. There's no debate over that. So trying to rationalize or trying to, you know, coddle that perspective is fundamentally antithetical to progress. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not going to apologize, and I'm really going to blow it off the gate. I'm not quite going to Godwin's law here, but I'm going to push it to the edge. I'm not going to try to sympathize with a perspective. I'll land this plane a little bit softer. I'm not going to sympathize with a perspective that is contributing to the spread of bad information or misaction. Because why would you? Why would you?
Can I have a turn now?
Oh boy.
Excellent.
Edit that out.
No, you should definitely keep that. So this is what's funny is Griff is very much a left-brained human. I'm very much a right-brained human. So together, we're a whole brain.
What does that mean exactly?
Thinking, feeling.
Ah.
In very overgeneralized terms.
Broad.
Very broad, overgeneralized.
Painting with a push broom. Got it.
Yes, yes, yes. So.
We put that on a t-shirt. Painting with a
push broom.
Yeah.
You have to turn it into a graphic, though.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I hear and understand everything you said. So much disagreement. So, yeah, pretty much.
All right, the first on-air marital spat. Love it. Let's go.
All right, here we go. This is what fights look like for us.
You're about to hear a marital fight.
No, we're about to watch one.
Hey, we've got popcorn.
And this is actually a conversation that Griff and I have pretty frequently. I think we just forget that we have it. But I don't feel like... First of all, I hate the word coddling because I think it is just, it misses the mark completely on so many different levels. But I don't think that you have to justify something with someone. I got to think about how I'm going to try to put this. Basically, you can still say that you believe something is wrong and hold someone accountable for something while having compassion for where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. The two are not mutually exclusive. So you can absolutely be like, this is what needs to be being done. This is what the research says. You are actually wrong. You need to be wearing a mask, but also be able to treat them like a human and have compassion for their viewpoints. So I disagree. You do have to have empathy for where they're coming from and where they are coming from as a human, but you still can hold accountability for their actions.
I think there's a difference between having compassion for the human as an individual and creating space for an incorrect assumption or standpoint or whatever the case may be. I'm not saying that people who are anti-vaxxers, I don't really like that label because it feels too easy. It feels reductivist. I'm not saying that they don't deserve compassion or they don't deserve to be heard, but I am not going to, and I don't think we should create, you know, I don't think we should create a space where bad science is allowed to thrive. Patton Oswalt, and I'm quoting a comedian here, Patton Oswalt does this bit where he kind of pokes fun at this idea of respecting everyone's opinion. And he's like, no, we don't need to respect everyone's opinion. My uncle, respecting everyone's beliefs, my uncle believes he saw Sasquatch. We neither believe him nor respect him, you know. We need to acknowledge everyone's opinion. And I think there's a line between acknowledging it and having compassion and dehumanizing it, you know. And I think that's where that conflict comes from. So I don't think that we're actually that far apart in that sense.
Well, it's the difference between acceptance and tolerance, right?
Sure.
Explain more, Russ.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I think I see where you're going, because I don't think there's as much of a difference between acceptance and tolerance. I think maybe acceptance and understanding.
I think both require understanding. So to accept something effectively would mean that you also can agree with it in some capacity, even if it is a minute capacity. A tolerance is it exists in the world and it's not going away, and I'm not going to actively do things against it, kind of scenario, at least in my world, right? And so I feel like it's something along those lines where it's like, yeah, these people can have these opinions, and that's fine, it's their opinion, right? And as long as they're not enacting and causing others issues, which is, of course, where the line is, it's that, I forget what the word is, but I can do anything I want as long as I don't affect other people, right? And that applies to a lot of things. And I feel like that's the same thing here. It's like, as long as, you know, you can have your opinions about wearing masks or not wearing masks, doesn't really matter until you are in public and suddenly it becomes a problem.
Right. Well, and here's, you know, throwing more monkey wrenches into all of this.
Throw some gas on it, man.
You know, where, like, who defines and where is that line?
Oh, absolutely.
Of, like, I'm affecting you by, this is the issue. One of the issues with social media is that it's, and I don't even want to say it's an issue, because the information age, I'm not just talking about social media, but it's, you know, it's a huge part of it. The information age has brought the availability for so many voices.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's also the availability for so many voices. And so it's easy to...
the democratization of media.
Right. It's easy to get all of these voices kind of together, especially when, you know, you're already thinking along one path. If somebody presents something that's contrary to that path, and then somebody presents what seems to be a valid counterargument, whether or not it actually is, even if it feels, you know, on the face of it or objective as we can get about these things, outlandish, if you're already on that trajectory, you're going to be easier swayed to that trajectory. Right. And kind of, Griff, one of your previous points is like, yeah, the science arguably does say that masks work. I agree with that. I've seen the science myself. I've talked with people in the field about this. And I, you know, we talk about arguments from authority, like epidemiologists, immunologists, the whole gamut say, yeah, masks help stop the transmission of diseases. However, the counter argument that I've also received is that, you know, speaking, we'll pull a particular instance out. The pastor that I used to work for in San Jose. Well, I've seen the science too, and I, you know, I see that this, and this, that masks don't really help or whatever else. And that is actually, in my anecdotal experience, a much more common argument against, you know, well, the science clearly says this. Depends on who your authorities are.
Well, it's your perspective, unfortunately, right? We as non-scientific community people really can't fully formulate an answer to whether this document is valid, provided the contextual context.
Good job.
Is that a thing? I work for the redundant department of redundancy. It's fine.
It's called IT.
It is. But it's one of those scenarios where we are not educated to a point where I think we could even positively make that assumption of sure. we are right or the document is right or whatever else. We just have to rely on the best knowledge that we have. And I feel like other people do the same thing, right? And so the issue we run into, of course, is, you know, based on your experience, based on your world, based on whatever is happening on that side of the world, you think that it's absolutely incorrect. And on my side of the world, I think it's absolutely right. And I can't really fault either side for that, unfortunately. Like, I wish there was a definitive on-off button for a lot of this stuff, because, my goodness, it would make life so much better. Mm-hmm. I'm drawn back to a meme that I saw years ago, but it's two people are standing on either side of a 6 or a 9, depending on which side you're on, and the caption is simply, just because your perception is different doesn't mean that you're right. Mm-hmm. And I love that so much, because there was an intention when creating that drawing on the ground. It may have been a 6, it may have been a 9, but we don't have that context here. But we know that one of these two is incorrect, but we can't argue the point because neither of us know. Take it away, Griff.
No, I mean, perspective is an extremely tricky thing, obviously.
But in 90% of the world or more, perception is the truth. Mm-hmm. And that's what causes a lot of issues. It's what resolves a lot of issues. But
well, it's perspective reinforced by personal narrative.
Well, yeah.
Because you will have, and we can go all the way back to that article in The Lancet that kind of kicked off the modern skeptical vaccine skepticism era, in that, you know, it reinforced from an authoritative point what some people it confirmed suspicions, basically, or it confirmed fears, whatever you want to say.
Sure.
The problem is that
some group was validated.
Exactly. Everything that came out after it said, nope, that's bad science. It's bunk. But that missile had already sailed.
No, it's already been validated. That's the thing.
Exactly. And that's where you really get cognitive dissonance, because then people start to throw, well, that's where the kind of conspiracy start to come out. It's like, oh, well, that's, you know, that's what big science wants, or big pharma, or whoever
they try to bury,
which is so, huh, this is the weird part for me, because big pharma, sketch.
Oh, completely. Well, and this is the problem, is that big pharma has been horribly corrupted and horribly twisted in the past. Yeah. Same, mm-hmm. Any of your big institutions. I mean, how long was there scientific racism, and we just kind of like phrenology? Is that where the
yes. forget?
Yes. With the skulls, like, oh, well, black people have dents in their skulls and makes them more submissive. That's horribly racist and right. just horribly.
I've never heard that.
Horribly false. No, it's a thing.
Okay.
It was a thing. And it was accepted in the scientific community in the 1800s wow. as legitimate science, until someone said, no, this is crap.
Someone needs to look into this.
Yeah,
right?
Someone looked. Science kept doing its thing. Yeah. And that's the problem within these institutions, is that they are not static, and they are not perfect. And they are dynamic, and they change, and they're driven by humans who, as we know, are far from perfect. And so they're constantly evolving. Well,
it's all good until it's not.
Exactly. Right. When someone can take a snapshot of it, though.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, yes. Big Pharma has pushed the opioid epidemic on us. Also helped cure polio.
Yeah.
You know?
They have both sides, right? I mean, it's not a predominantly negative or positive thing.
Right.
But that's also where a lot of skepticism and a lot of other perceptions come from.
But the problem is, people want these institutions they want something that is right all the time. Because yes. then it makes you feel secure.
Well, it makes it easy, right?
It makes it easy to say, you know, we don't know. We can go to this.
We have an absolute truth.
We have a truth. Mm-hmm. We think this could be our absolute truth. Mm-hmm. And it's not, because the things that create this absolute truth framework are human by nature and therefore fallible.
Exactly.
So you're in a situation where there's a lot of fear and a lot of uncertainty and doubt and skepticism bubbling around. And then every now and then something from above that's supposed to be an authoritative power drops and solidifies these fears and suspicions.
Well, it reinforces, right?
Or reinforces it. And it's almost like that movement of thought stops, right. You know, and now it's like, oh, well, this is the hill we're going to die on.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know,
this is now set in stone. We are done looking at this. We're done.
And right. It's funny, because I've been looking at that more recently, as I am going through a bit of theological adjustments, like I've been looking at that in a lot of my cohort, where it's like, you know, they came from point A to they are now at point B, but they have been at point B for a hell of a long time. Mm-hmm. And now questioning anything about point B is
anathema.
Or it's just declared as flat out wrong. No,
it's just rejected
because
offhand.
It can't be because this is what I was taught. And so it was true. I feel like we could talk about this for hours and hours and hours because this has been constantly in the public mind for a year now.
Well, and it's going to be continuing.
Well, this is
as
just
well.
The latest instance of it.
This happens to be the pandemic that has incited yet another version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're always going to have different contexts for this stuff. We're always going to have different ideas that are going to be susceptible to these levels of incorrect, correct data, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really matter if it's the current pandemic or if it's the newest fast food craze or the new diet plan.
Climate change. That's the other big one.
Yeah, you know, that's another huge one's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. But there's just, these things keep coming up. And unfortunately, it's almost on the individual to fix the problem because it is the individual thought process and perception and education level and
that's
willingness.
That's a huge ask.
It is a huge ask. But that's where it lies.
Be the change you want to be or you want to see in the world.
Absolutely.
Put that on a fortune cookie.
Uh-huh. So as we close, especially Christy, since you are a guest for the evening, and regrettably, I don't know that we left much of an opening for you to do a lot of talking.
That's fine.
Yeah.
This isn't a topic that I talk a lot about on anyway.
That's fair. And we did also rope you in literally 5 minutes before we started recording this episode.
Bring me back to talk about trauma, talk about any of those things.
Oh, I'm excited.
I will make sure that I do not share a mic with Griff.
I'm very excited to have you. Apparently just you. Sorry, sometimes I accidentally start taking things
we're
over.
We're just
and I
cucumbers
don't
over here. It's fine. Yeah. This is the Jake Show.
The
I'm
Jake
out.
Show.
I'm out.
Bye, guys.
It's been fun. See y'all later.
I'm the worst. But anyways, Christy, closing thoughts on, you know, vaccine rhetoric, how we talk about it, what you want to see.
I think in general, kind of going back to what I already hammered, is that whatever the topic is, if we can approach it and make sure people are seen, valued, and heard while making sure that our points are getting across. And I do think everyone needs to do their due diligence and get their vaccines and see if we can get over this pandemic. But in the meantime, have patience, have compassion, and have discussion, because mm-hmm. when you shoot someone down and you make it very intense, you're less likely to have an open discussion where any kind of progress is made. But if you can see the need behind the perspective, behind the behavior, and then discuss it and regulate each other, then you're more likely to make more progress.
Absolutely.
And at least finding some common ground.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, thank you everybody for listening to the episode. Please
like, subscribe, follow. Bookmark, share copiously. Share the podcast, not the pandemic.
Ooh, I like that as a slogan.
No, you don't.
No.
I like it.
It's cringy.
Hey, two versus two. Thank you so much, Christy, for joining us, especially at the last minute. This has been Scotch and Socialism. Find us online, wherever you get your social media,
you get your podcasts.
Please remember to listen and drink responsibly. Have a great one.